Hello and welcome back for another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Ron.
And I'm a little horse.
Yes, she is a little horse. She's just getting over a cold, but she's also Jean Marie. Collective, we're the host of Podcast DX. On today's show, we're speaking with Sharon Krishner. Is that, or Krisher? Is that right, Sharon?
Krisher,
okay.
Sharon is joining us today from Beverly Hills, California, where she continues to box, play tennis, and practice yoga. Sharon is here today to talk about Parkinson's disease, and you can subscribe to her blog today at twitchywoman.com. Hi, Sharon.
Thank you for taking the time to speak with us today, Sharon.
Oh, my pleasure.
Sharon, first, can you tell our listeners what Parkinson's disease is?
Sure. According to the Parkinson's Disease Association, Parkinson's is a progressive chronic neurological disorder that can affect a person's ability to move well and do common daily activities of living. And one of the most prominent symptoms is a tremor, or most people think it is a tremor, but there's a lot more to it than just a tremor. And the other perception is that it's an old man's disease, and it's not. There are lots of women like me who have Parkinson's.
Yes, a good friend of mine has it as well.
What are the stages of Parkinson's, Sharon?
Okay, according to the Parkinson's Foundation, there are five stages. And although no two people are alike, we like to say they're like snowflakes. Each person has a different form of Parkinson's. It usually progresses through the same stages. And I've been lucky. I was diagnosed 10 years ago, and I'm still basically stage one, maybe stage two. So I will go through them, what they are. Stage one is the initial stage where the person has mild symptoms, generally on one side of the body only. If they have a tremor, it starts on one side. Other movement symptoms might be slowness, changes in posture, walking. And a facial mask is a common expression where the face just seems frozen. As the symptoms start getting worse, you go into stage two, and where it begins to affect both sides of the body. So you have tremor, rigidity, and other movement symptoms, walking problems, poor posture. But the person's still able to live alone, do daily tasks, but they're getting harder. Stage three is considered mid-stage. Loss of balance and slowness of movement are hallmarks. Falls are more common. In fact, falls are probably the biggest problem with Parkinson's because, as you know, especially in elderly people, fall can be fatal.
Mm-hmm.
In stage three, the person is still pretty independent, but symptoms can significantly impair activity, such as dressing and eating. And then as it progresses, stage four, it's possible to stand without assistance, but you may require a walker, and the person is unable to live alone at this point. And stage five is the most advanced and debilitating stage, where stiffness makes it impossible to stand or walk, and the person requires a wheelchair, and round-the-clock nursing is required for all activities. And one of the hallmarks of this stage is hallucinations and delusions. And there are many, many other important non-motor symptoms as well.
Okay. Besides the movement.
Yeah.
Okay. Sharon, could you describe what symptoms that you had that would lead you to seek out medical care? Did your friends and family notice that you had symptoms, or did you notice something?
Okay. What happened was I had some things going on, but I had no idea what they were. I was writing, and my foot would start to shake, and I'd shake my foot out, and it would stop, and it would go away, and maybe a couple of weeks later it would come back. And then I broke my other leg, my left leg, and the fall triggered more symptoms. And it's very common with Parkinson's that you will have some kind of a trauma, and the symptoms will flare up. It will come out. So what happened was I broke my left ankle, and my right toes started to twitch again. And after a few weeks of this, I was on a cast and crutches, And I went to my internist and they said, what's going on here? My foot is twitching. I don't know what to do. Did I do something when I fell? Yeah.
Right.
Seems logical to me.
Sure, yeah.
And he said, well, let's put you on some Xanax because you could be stressed out from all of this. Let's see if it calms it down. And he did that, and I felt good. it continued. And then September, October 2008. At the end of 2008, in the very last week of 2008, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, stage one, barely stage one.
Wow.
So I'm scheduled to go in for a lumpectomy. And I went in for my pre-op physical. And I talked to my doctor. I said, the tremor's still there. What do I do? And he sent me for an MRI on my brain and it came back normal. So he sent me to a neurologist. So within a week or 2 week period, I had surgery and saw a neurologist.
Wow.
And I was a wreck, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Understandably so.
Fortunately, with the breast cancer, it was barely stage one. I had the lumpectomy. I had radiation for 6 weeks. I've done nothing since. That's been great.
Oh, that's great.
But the neurologist, and I don't know if he was trying to be nice or if he was just being a neurologist, says to me, well, you have Parkinson's-like symptoms. Let's put you on this medication and see what happens. And we'll increase it every few weeks. He was awful.
Uh-huh.
He was hard to get in touch with. I would call. I would have questions. He wouldn't answer my questions. The nurse would call me back. But, I was going through the other stuff, and I just kind of let that go, and I slept through pretty much 6 months. And at some point, he had put me on Requip, and it increased it so fast that I started having hallucinations at night.
Oh,
wow.
And we were away, and it was horrible. I had one night where I was up the whole night. So I came home, I called my internist, and I said, I'm not going back to him. I need to see a different doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sent me to a movement disorders clinic. That was a year after I first saw him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was lucky. Some women take much longer.
Okay.
Some people, not just women, a lot of people, men too. So I finally went to the movement disorders clinic at UCLA where I started with a wonderful doctor who I'm still with 10 years later. And she said, yes, you definitely have Parkinson's. Here's some information. Here's some websites. Yeah, call me if you have questions.
Right.
Oh,
the kind of doctor you needed. Right.
Yes.
Right. And she was my savior. That's all I can say.
Mm-hmm.
And she said to me, you have tremor dominant Parkinson's, which is a good form of probably the best case scenario. So here I have the best case scenario of breast cancer and Parkinson's. So that was a relief.
Very good.
Yeah.
I'm sure that just hearing that was a relief, And a lot of times your mindset will help you heal on a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
At least I think so. So it took you about a year to get the diagnosis then, right?
Yeah, it was about a year. When did I see her? Yeah, it was a year from the time when I broke my leg till I saw her, a little over a year.
So, Sharon, can you tell us... how was it diagnosed? Did they do any special tests, or how was the Parkinson's diagnosed with you?
Yeah, at the time, 10 years ago, they weren't. It was basically you open and close your hands, they tap your foot, you walk down the hallway, they check your balance. There's a certain amount of standard neurological exams they do. A movement disorder specialist, though, is trained to see what's different, what Parkinson's is, where a regular neurologist who you think would understand it doesn't necessarily stay up on it because they're busy learning, with all the other neurological diseases. So she specializes in Parkinson's and she knew exactly what was going on the minute I walked in the room.
Wow. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay. Is Parkinson's something that could be genetic? And if it is, does it run in your family?
It can be genetic. My father's sister supposedly had Parkinson's and Alzheimer's at the same time. We don't know. She was young, and she passed away 20 years ago, and nobody seems to know the details. I do not have a genetic form of Parkinson's.
Okay.
At least I didn't when I was tested. They've come out with some other genes that they think may be related to it. But as far as I know, I don't have that.
Okay.
Okay. And Sharon, just looking at your website and listening to you on the podcast, it sounds like you have a wonderful sense of humor and you've always been extremely active and an engaged person. How has having an active lifestyle and a sense of humor helped you cope with Parkinson's and breast cancer and all of these trials and tribulations?
Well, one of the things that saved me literally was the three women I play tennis with.
Okay.
I'm out there every week with them. We've been playing together for over 20 years. And as I started to have more and more problems and thinking about quitting, they said, "You can't quit. We won't let you quit. Get out here. You know, we don't care. You know, we're here for you." And I was telling one doctor about that, and he said, "Keep those friends."
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the most important thing, is do not isolate yourself. And I'm a social person. I don't isolate myself. It's not in me. I need to be out there with people. But when I was at the World Parkinson's Congress in Kyoto last June, one of the speakers said that the number one reason for people going downhill faster is isolation.
Wow.
Makes sense.
And so for me, being active, I've always been a gym rat. I went to yoga classes. I went to aerobic classes, step classes, you name it. I did all of those classes at the gym. And I played tennis all these years. So I was always active.
Sounds like recreational therapy at work.
A little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Well, exercise, what they've discovered, as opposed to 20, 30 years ago when you were told to go home and just rest and you have 5 years, now they say, get out and exercise. Exercise is medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And if doctors can write a prescription for exercise as they would write it for medicine, a lot of people would be in better shape.
That's great.
Very
and
true.
I know some health insurance companies even offer a free health club membership as part of their policy.
To keep people healthy.
To keep people active, yeah.
Lita and
I doesn't. I wish it did.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm
Lita
sorry.
And I are looking at each other because we're both rec therapists, and we really, truly understand the benefits of recreation and participation. So we are definitely on your side.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure.
Well, there's been a lot of studies in the last 10 years or so. There was a study coming out of the Cleveland Clinic about bicycle riding and doing accelerated, you know, doing high RPMs at a low resistance.
Okay.
But it was keeping your heart rate up.
Sure,
you know, for a certain amount of time. Boxing in Parkinson's has become very popular. Dancing for Parkinson's. There's all kinds of classes for people with Parkinson's. The only one that I take is boxing for Parkinson's. I go to regular yoga classes. And I look around the room, and if I'm having balance problems, there's other people who can't balance too. It's not just me.
Gotcha.
Sure.
So as long as I can stay in those classes, I'm going to. And I tell people that all the time. I said, if you are in a regular exercise class, keep going. Because if you're used to that intensity of exercise, why dial it down,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you think now that you've been diagnosed, you can't do it.
That's great advice. And that, yeah, that's amazing. Sharon, could you tell us what actually causes Parkinson's? Is there a known cause for Parkinson's disease?
No, there's a lot of theories out there, one of which is pesticides. And as we have more pesticides in our environment, more people are going to be diagnosed. I think a lot of people have not been correctly diagnosed in the past, but it's a very low incidence of Parkinson's disease in the general population. I think there's only a million or so in the United States. But they expect those numbers to increase dramatically, partly because of pesticide use. There's a genetic factor for some people. Other people, they call it idiopathic Parkinson's. They don't know what caused it, and that was my case. Although I remember as a kid growing up in the Midwest chasing the extermination trucks as they sprayed for mosquitoes.
Oh.
So it could, and I've talked to other people who had the same experience. So we think that whatever was in that may have affected us many years later. So I don't know for sure.
Okay.
Well, you do have a pretty active lifestyle with all the things you do, but after diagnosis, were there any lifestyle changes that you made, or you just kind of kept doing what you've been doing?
I kept doing, well, once I came out of my radiation fog, which was, you know, that was a good 6 months, even though it was only 6 weeks of radiation, until you get your energy back. I went back to exercising regularly, especially when I went to the movement disorder specialist. She told me to get out and exercise. And I had already started to practicing yoga at that point. She's a big believer in yoga, so we bonded on that issue. And every time I go in, she makes sure I was doing my yoga. And it does help a lot with the flexibility and stiffness. And I can't recommend it highly enough, because you have to, you know, even if you can't do everything, just get out there and do something. You can do chair yoga. You can do it on the mat. But it helps you move. And so for me, it was just a matter of, if I was exercising 3 days a week, maybe I should exercise 5 days a week or 6 days a week. And I found that that was more important to me than a lot of other activities I had been doing, because it helped me feel better.
Sure, sure.
Are there actually like yoga for Parkinson's classes?
Yeah, there are, but I don't go to them.
Okay, you just do the regular, yeah.
Right.
You don't restrict yourself.
I went to a yoga therapist who specializes in Parkinson's, and I did several sessions with her, private, and she said to me, as long as you can do regular classes, don't go to...
Don't downgrade yourself, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
She said, as long as you can keep up, keep doing it, and you feel better about yourself when you do that. My tennis game, on the other hand, isn't so good, but that's issues.
Okay. I mean,
but I'm still there.
Yeah, and it sounds like that friendship that you have there is reason enough to go. Sharon, you had said that one of the major safety concerns with Parkinson's disease is balance. Have you made any accommodations to your home or lifestyle to take that into account?
No. However, I didn't go on Sinemet, which is carbidopa levodopa, for 5 years. My doctor was she doesn't like to chase a tremor, she says. She says, live with it until you can't. And, of course, it was on my right side, and I'm right-handed. So eating became very difficult. I could not, and I love to cook, and my husband would see me with a knife, and he grabbed the knife out of my hand and start chopping because he wouldn't let me chop. Once I went on the cinema, it was like the tremor went away, and my life went back to normal. One of the few things that I do have problems with is I don't pick up my right foot enough. So I had been noticing this even before I was diagnosed. My right toe, the right shoe, always wore out faster on the toe. You know?
Okay.
Well, I was dragging my foot, which I didn't realize. And curbs, you know, I'd be walking and go to a curb. A curb suddenly became a black diamond ski run for me. And I tripped a number of times before I figured out what was going on. You know, I'd go flying and pick myself up and just keep going. And I learned you have to watch where you're going when you walk. So I do, if I'm going up and down stairs, I hold on to railings. If we are traveling, I bring walking poles with me, because when you're out, especially in ancient ruins or whatever, and it's uneven, you need something to hold on to.
Mm-hmm.
And there isn't always a rail. So I take walking poles, and it helps a lot. And walking poles are not canes.
Right. Yeah, Jean's a big proponent. She has a set.
I love my set. Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, walking sticks are great. And they don't make you look like you have anything wrong with you.
Exactly.
It looks like you were hiking.
Yep.
So, so those are the kinds of things that I have done. But otherwise, I just live my life hoping that, you know, each day is okay. Each day is different, but depends. One of the big issues I have is insomnia, which is a problem for most of us with Parkinson's. That was another symptom that I had prior to my diagnosis. And, you know, if you don't sleep, you don't feel well.
Right.
And you don't move well.
Do you take anything for the insomnia?
Oh, I've tried all kinds of things. And other than a sleeping pill, which my doctor does not like me taking regularly, mm-hmm. nothing works. Okay. I've tried meditation. I've tried yoga nidra, which is yoga for sleep. I've tried melatonin. Doesn't do a thing for me. So, you know, if I have a couple nights where I don't sleep, a couple nights in a row where I really don't sleep, I'll take a sleeping pill for two or three nights and get just to get break that cycle.
Right, right. Yeah. Besides the medication and lifestyle changes, is there anything else that can help alleviate symptoms of Parkinson's?
Regular massage.
Oh, massage. Okay.
Massage, yeah, because your muscles get stiff. I get a massage like every other week, and I think it helps. I really do. It's hard to say because I do so much self-care. You have to really take, if you have Parkinson's, you have to be on top of it. You have to be aware of what you need and take care of it. I've found that that's probably, I spend more time on self-care than anything else.
Sure, sure. Yeah. How about swimming or a hot tub? You know, like you're mentioning massage.
Swimmer.
So no, either am I, yeah. But some people might be.
We have a hot tub in our backyard. I don't go in that often.
Okay.
But it does help. I'm not a swimmer. I just never like swimming.
The yoga.
Other people swear.
Right.
Yeah, other people swear by it. You know what it is? If you find a form of exercise that works for you,
absolutely.
Do it.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
If you don't like it, you're not going to do it. So keep experimenting till you find a combination of what you like. And
there
don't
you
do
go.
The same thing every day.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
So I go to these boxing and Parkinson's classes, and they're a blast. And we all have a great time together. There's very few women in my class. A lot of times I'm the only woman, but I don't care.
Right.
In the boxing for Parkinson's class, do they have you call out or yell and practice that? Because
yes. Yeah. A soft voice is a problem. And we have an issue here because my husband's hearing is a problem and my voice is getting softer. So even with his hearing aids, he doesn't always hear me because my voice, I think I'm speaking louder than I am.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so they have she'll say, you know, call out a number and you have to punch, you know, 6 times or 8 times on the bag and you have to count out loud, scream it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
So we do things like that.
Right. Right.
Why is that? I'm a little lost.
I'm not quite sure why the voice gets softer. I think it's part of it is feedback. You don't hear yourself, your voice getting softer. It sounds loud enough to you, but it isn't for people on the outside, you know, people listening to you. I don't know why. I'm assuming that the vocal cords also get affected by
sure.
the
Parkinson's. Well, that makes sense. Then.
Nerve,
yeah,
right.
I get it now. Okay.
And then practicing yelling can be helpful.
A speech therapist can be a very important part of therapy because not just the fact that your speech gets altered and it won't be as loud, but swallowing becomes a problem. And in fact, swallowing is one of the big issues because if you aspirate, you can get pneumonia, and that causes, you know, that's even worse. So, yeah, so speech therapists will help with your voice and with swallowing issues. It's very important.
And have you changed even the way that you eat to make it easier with the swallowing issues? Like, do they have you drink warm
tea?
I've
been really bad about that. I don't eat meat anyway. I haven't eaten meat in years. Red meat anyway. I'll eat chicken and turkey. And but other than that, I really haven't changed my diet. Some people say don't eat any dairy. Well, if you're not eating red meat, you have to have something instead. So I like dairy. I like milk and cheese, but I haven't changed my diet drastically. That may be the next step is trying to go vegan and see what happens.
Okay.
Have your family and friends helped you on this journey?
Yeah, you were saying that your tennis buddies are a big part of your life.
Yes. My husband is. My husband keeps telling me I'm not so bad. He keeps telling me, you know, look, you've had this for 10 years. You're doing great. And he goes with me maybe once a year to my doctor. And he's very funny because she'll be asking me about this symptom or that symptom. And he goes, well, I have that too. Isn't it just old age?
Oh.
Which yes and no. Some, you know, there are some differences. But you know, I'll take him to things. We went to the Parkinson's Walk in LA a couple weeks ago, and he was a big part of that. And, you know, we will be out with friends, and he will see that I am just falling apart. You know, he'll see that I'm tired before I do.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll say, it's time to go. She's falling apart. She's melting. It's time to go home.
Right.
And so he's been great. One of the problems, and it's my problem, not their problem, is I don't ask for help from my children. And my oldest daughter lives in Chicago, where you are. And one day she said to me, do my other sisters ever go with me to my appointments? And I said, no, I never thought to ask them. And as a woman with Parkinson's, and having been involved in the study, Women and PD Talk, that the Parkinson's Foundation went on, which was we were studying women, women's issues, disparities in treatment and outcome for women with Parkinson's. And one of the issues was that it was hard to go from being the nurturer, from being, you know, the nurturing person, the caregiver, to becoming the care receiver.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And women, because we are many of us are mothers, tend to be the nurturers in the family. And then we hear from the men that their role has changed because they're not used to having to take care of someone.
Oh, okay.
So they're not used to, you know. So
right, right,
the husbands
right.
of husbands of these women. So these are all things that came out in our study with the Parkinson's Foundation, and you can go to their website and look it up. It's Women in PD Talk, and you can find the all the information. There's like a 70-page report that we did. But that was one of the interesting things that came out of it, was that women do not get the care that they need, because one reason is that they don't know how to become the care receiver, and often they don't have anybody to take care of them.
Okay.
And another thing is many of the women we spoke to were taking care of their husbands who were sicker than they were.
Oh.
Right. Yeah. That's the added stress there.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. So they didn't have any time to take care of themselves.
Right. That'll definitely slow down your healing.
Yeah.
Well,
so. Sharon, I absolutely adore your website. And could you tell us more about what influenced you to create Twitchy Woman? Twitchy Woman's Adventures with Parkinson?
Yeah, Twitchy Woman, my husband says he gave me the name. He's great at giving names. I said, no, this one was mine, all mine. Remember the song Witchy Woman?
Yes.
And
yes.
Twitchy Woman just fit. And I said, no, this one was mine, and I'm sticking to that one. It just hit me one day. What happened was probably 3 or 4 years into this journey, as we call it, a journey with Parkinson's, I realized people were coming to me for advice. Out of the blue, they were calling me. I was getting phone calls. Can you talk to my cousin, my husband, my coworker, my friend who was newly diagnosed? And when I was diagnosed, there was nobody to reach out to. There was, when my doctor told me to go online, there was one blog that I could find. That was it. You know, and there were a couple of Parkinson's organizations, the Fox Foundation, the Parkinson's, American Parkinson's Disease Association, Parkinson's Foundation. That was it. Now mm-hmm. there's a whole lot of them, and there must be over 150 bloggers. Somebody
That's
actually
fantastic.
Found a whole bunch of them and made a list of them. It was amazing.
That's good.
So 5 years, I started my blog about almost 4 years ago, I guess, 4.5 years ago. And because people were reaching out to me and asking me questions, and I thought, well, if they have questions, there's got to be other people out there. So I started collecting names of people with Parkinson's. And, you know, I sent it out. I wrote my first one talking about my journey. I have to back up, though, first, because I go to a therapist at UCLA. There's a therapist at the Movement Disorders Clinic who is wonderful, a psychologist. And at one point he said to me, write your story. And I said, write my story? I don't write. I hated writing. I grew up in college where we had typewriters. Remember, you wrote everything mm-hmm. longhand and then you retyped it. And it was such a horrible process. So I started writing on the computer and I couldn't stop. And then all of a sudden I've got 20 pages, you know, of my story. And he's the only person who's ever read it.
Oh.
I've never let anybody else read that. But that prompted me, along with the phone call, all these calls that I was getting, and here I was starting to meet with people one-on-one, can I meet you for coffee? You know, we'll talk.
Okay.
And I thought, well, there must be something that I can do, something more that I can do to reach out to more people. So I thought, okay, I'll write a blog, never thinking it would keep going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'll go out there for 4 or 6 months and we'll be done. All of a sudden, people are finding me because there was, as opposed to 10 years ago, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, doctors were saying to their patients, get online and find some blogs you like, because there's a lot of good bloggers. And people were finding me.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, I went from having 15 people to 100 people, and then 200 people, you know, followers. And it just keeps exploding.
That's great.
And it's really been a wonderful experience. I have met people from all around the world who I consider my friends. Through this, I've become friends with a lot of other bloggers. And there's probably 7 or 8 lists out there now of the best Parkinson's blogs. So we all know who each other is because everybody's been on at least one of those lists.
Sure.
And I think I'm on 5 of them now, which is pretty amazing. The funniest was, though, I think it was Stanford put out a list, but they didn't bother to tell anybody that they had done this.
Oops.
And all of a sudden, and when you're looking at your statistics on the blogs, it tells you who referred you, you know, who the referrers were, if they're an outside visitor.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, Stanford came on my referral list, and I'm like, huh? Where did this come from?
Oh.
Well, they put out, I guess Stanford Medical School or Medical Center put out a list of their top blogs, and mine was on there. And I'm like, whoa. And I see two or three other people I know, and I emailed them. I said, did you know you're on this list? And they're like, no.
Well, that's a well-deserved honor.
That's a good list to be on.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. In fact, my husband's so proud of it. He tells everybody, the first thing he says is, she's on Stanford's list.
Sharon, do you have any tips or advice for our listeners?
If you are newly diagnosed, if you have not seen a movement disorder specialist and there is one anywhere within 150 miles of where you live, make sure you see a movement disorder specialist. Even if you only get them to them once a year and you see a neurologist the rest of the time, it's fine. But they know what your needs are more than anybody else. That's number one. Number two, keep doing what you've been doing. Don't stop anything unless you cannot physically do it.
Okay.
I think that's really important because people get this diagnosis, they are in shock, and they think, okay, my life is over, I can't do anything. And they stop doing things. And that's the worst thing you can do. See a movement disorder specialist, keep doing what you've been doing. Exercise, think of it as your medicine, it's required, daily exercise. If you walk around the block twice, increase gradually. Jimmy Choi, who is been on American Ninja Warrior, and many Parkinson's people know him.
I saw that.
This was a man who, for the first 5 years, did nothing. He sat on the couch. He gained 50 pounds. He couldn't walk without a cane, fell down the stairs carrying his infant son or daughter, and realized that he had to do something about his life. He is now an amazing athlete in spite of his Parkinson's, or because of his Parkinson's. He started by walking down to the corner. The next week, he walked around the corner and then started running, doing 5K walks and then 5K runs and half marathons. And he's shown that, yes, we can do a lot more than we think we can. So get out there, try something new, exercise, do something creative. Creativity seems to increase. Probably they don't know why. People who have never painted before are suddenly painting. With Parkinson's, people are singing, they're doing all kinds of things. Find something you like to do and find a Parkinson's buddy, somebody who can go through this journey with you, who understands how you feel. And I'm not a big support group person. Some people are, which I think is great. I find my support groups are my boxing group for Parkinson's because we're all there together. And, you know, we bonded and we have a common goal. But finding somebody with Parkinson's who understands you And you can say to them, oh, I'm having internal tremors today. They know what you're talking about. Nobody else does. And make sure you have the support of your family and friends. And don't hesitate to ask for help when you need it. The biggest problem for most people is they forget how to say, I need help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
We're adults. We can take care of ourselves, right?
Yeah, I think we could all use a little help.
We're all looking at each other like, yeah, uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But there's definitely some great advice.
Yeah. Sharon, thank you so much for joining us today. How can our listeners learn more about you and your website?
Okay, more about me. I grew up in St. Louis. I went to University of Illinois, where I met my husband, who is from Chicago, where you are. And then he went to Michigan Law School, so I followed him there. And then we came to Los Angeles. We've been here since 1975. We have three daughters and four wonderful grandchildren. And my husband's a retired attorney, and I'm a retired – not retired. I'm doing more now than when I was working. I've been a basic professional volunteer for the last 20 years. I've been on the board of various organizations, including some national boards, but I'm concentrating on Parkinson's stuff now. And one of the joys is that, because of my blog, I found out that the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, which is now part of the Parkinson's Foundation, was having a two-day seminar for women with Parkinson's, and yet it was an application process, and they were only taking 25 women.
Wow.
So I applied, and then I thought, I'm not going to let this go. This is an opportunity, right? So being the way I am, I started emailing the person in charge and said, can you let me know when it's going to be, because sure. I have to make other plans for that week. And so I got in, and there's all these people who know a whole lot more than they're much more knowledgeable than I am, and they're out in the community and they're doing this thing and that thing, and I'm like, why am I here? How did I get in? But I had been writing the blog for about 6 months, and so I had something to show for what I did, and it was wonderful. I met 24 other women from around the country, and still in touch with a lot of them. And one of the things we were asked to do was to do something in our community when we got back, to give back to the community. And there's a woman named Jen Parkinson. Yes, her name is Parkinson.
Wow.
who lives in the L.A. area, but she's about a 45-minute drive from my house. So we thought, well, let's try and do a weekend seminar, kind of like what we had gone to for the women in Los Angeles. But we could not get it together. She was young onset. She's probably 2 years older than my oldest daughter. I live in the city. She lives in the valley. And if you don't know the location, the geography, it's like going to another state. So we just couldn't get it together between her schedule and mine. And she actually teaches boxing for Parkinson's. The boxing is what got her out of bed as a young mother with two young children, and she couldn't move. And now she's teaching, and she's developed a whole program she calls neuroboxing. So we talked, she was doing her thing, so I thought, okay, I have these women on my website, on my list, who live in LA. I'll email all of them and see if they want to get together. So the first meeting was supposed to be three people plus me who had responded, and one woman called me the night before, said, I'm not coming. I said, why not? She says, I've never met another person with Parkinson's. I'm afraid, which is not uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, why don't you and I meet for coffee? Because I'd already been doing this, coffee thing for quite a while with other people. So I met with the two women the next day, and then I met with her later in the week, and we decided we're going to do something else. So we had one more meeting, and I thought, okay, this will be the last one. We invited somebody in, a woman with Parkinson's, to speak, and we had 15 people at that meeting at a restaurant. And I said, okay, thank you very much. They said, we want to do this again. So I had already started boxing classes, and I think a year before. And I think our next meeting was at the boxing gym. I can't remember if there was anything before. And all of a sudden, I had 25 people coming from all over. They were coming from an hour away.
Wow.
because they found out there was something for women with Parkinson's and they wanted to come.
Sure.
And what we found out from them was they didn't want to have what they call a bitch session. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to have a, you know, a depressing group, you know, traditional support
group. Woe is me.
Yeah, woe is me. They wanted to get out there, meet other women, and have some fun when they were doing it. And that started, this group has been going ever since, I guess it's almost, yeah, January would be 3 years.
That's great.
4 years, I think. And we've done boxing, we've done yoga, we've done dancing, we've done arts and crafts. We've had a sex therapist. We've had my psychologist come in and speak, who was very popular. Sometimes we allow the husbands. When the sex therapist came, they weren't allowed in the room. And that was hugely popular, as you can imagine. People came to that we've never seen before. But they came to that one. So it just shows that if you have the right programming for women, that's what they see. They are seeking. They're seeking camaraderie. Mm-hmm. They're seeking a community. I can't speak for the men, but I know that the guys in my boxing class, they're all there supporting each other. In fact, I had a team for the Parkinson's Walk. One of the other people had a team for the Parkinson's Walk. So we were, you know, it was a lot of trash talk and trying to get everybody to support us. So he came out ahead, but, you know, what can I say?
But, well, it sounds like you've been very active in the community, and the community is very receptive to what you're doing. That's wonderful. And it all started with twitchywoman.com.
Yeah, I guess so. It started when the first person called me and said, can you talk to me?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Because at some point you realize that you need to hear, especially when you're newly diagnosed, and this is one of the big things that a lot of the bloggers were talking about, or at the people with Parkinson's who were at the World Parkinson's World Parkinson's. Anyway, we were talking about having peer mentors. Mm-hmm. So if you're newly diagnosed, when you go into that doctor and they say the words, you have Parkinson's, you shut down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's not a good thing to hear. And you walk out and you're in a daze. If you're lucky, you had brought your husband or a child or somebody with you to hear that with you. I didn't, to either of the doctors. Most people don't have anybody with them. They walk out. They don't know what to do. They don't remember anything. And so we recommend that you try and get back into the doctor as soon as possible, not wait 3 or 4 or 5 months, which is what a lot of them say. Try and get in, you know, within a few weeks and bring somebody with you so that you can ask all the questions you have and write everything down. But we're also looking at peer mentoring for these people. So giving them the name of someone like me, who can talk to them and answer their questions and be there for them and say, you know, there is life after diagnosis. And that will go a long way in helping someone accept the diagnosis. We go through, the stages of grief, not necessarily in order, and sometimes 2 or 3 stages at the same time, because there's denial and there's making a deal, you know, you go through all these things. And it's very, very hard to get through this first few months without somebody to help you. For me, I got through those first few months because I was sleeping off radiation.
Okay. Well, I guess that gave you time to process it for sure.
Yeah.
Well,
so
Sharon,
when I came out of my fog, I moved on.
I really appreciate you taking the time and joining us today. And
it was my pleasure.
I'm sure our listeners really learned a lot.
And then they can also, you know, subscribe to your podcast and or your, I'm sorry, subscribe
your
to your web blog.
Right.
Once I have brain fog as well, because it's an amazing resource.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll
I
make
really
sure
appreciate
that we
hearing that.
We're going to make sure that we post your website and blog on the pages dedicated to this
there.
Process. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. I'm also on Facebook and I'm on Twitter.
Okay.
I'm not real good at the other social media because I just don't get it. I'm too old. So,
I hear you.
I've got two of my daughters work in computer stuff. One of them does a lot of marketing, and I keep saying to her, you've got to help me redo my website. Give me some time. They don't have the time for me. And I don't want to hire somebody, but I need them to help me understand what it is that I'm trying, how to get out there.
Right,
more.
Right.
Sure.
Right.
Cause it's... Well, if your girls are, or if your children are listening to this, go help your mom. Get her back on the map.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well,
that's the only time
reach.
I've asked for help. Yeah.
All right. Okay. All right.
Well, Sharon, thank you again for joining us. If our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram.
And if you have a moment to spare, please leave us a review wherever you get your podcast. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard in this podcast.
Till next week.